Today we're going to actually take a look at two of the chapters in our Quest 52 book. They sort of blended together really well in my understanding, mostly because they were dealing with crisis. And so I want to start just by kind of getting our thoughts into a mode of how do you handle crisis? And I'm not going to define crisis for you. I mean, some people handle crisis a little bit better than others, and some people really struggle to really identify things. I'll give you a really good example. On Friday, I was driving my school bus, and there's always a lot of drama on the school bus. But all of a sudden, one of the little boys, who was probably a third grader, just started to scream. And I had to stop the bus. His name is Oliver. Oliver, what are you screaming at? Somebody stole my glasses. Okay. Well, Oliver doesn't wear glasses. These were some sort of a plastic thing that he had gotten in some sort of a gift bag, so they really weren't all that expensive. But he just was in a crisis. Well, they weren't stolen. They were on the floor, and one of the children had grabbed a hold of them and was playing with them because they were on the floor. Unfortunately, they didn't ask whose glasses these are, and so that exacerbated the crisis, because now not only did somebody else have the glasses, but apparently they were broken. And so now we've got a bigger issue. Unfortunately, Oliver's way of handling this was just to curl up within himself and start to cry. This is a third grader just bawling as, you know, crocodile tears because of broken plastic glasses. Some people handle crisis better than others. But how about you? How do you handle crisis? Whatever that crisis may be, whatever it looks like in your world, do you handle it with grace? Do you stay in control? Or do you struggle? I would venture to guess that all of us would probably say, it depends on the crisis. I could probably handle some crisis with grace and other probably not so much. Crisis, though, tends to bring out our base nature. You know, some people, when a crisis happens, they react with anger. You know, or they react with denial, or they say things in the crisis that later they regret. Or they think unholy thoughts about the people that are involved in the crisis. Maybe they even seek revenge. I was afraid that that was what was going to escalate with little Oliver after he found out that his plastic glasses had been broken, that he was going to go into a rage and he was going to try to break something of some other kids. Fortunately, I averted that crisis. You see, a lot of people have trouble with crisis. Some people even deny it altogether. They stick their head in the sand like an ostrich. You know, nothing's wrong. Everything is just fine. I'm just going to deny that there's a crisis, and hopefully it'll just go away on its own. Most of us, I think, wish that we could handle crisis better. And I think one of the ways that we can maybe figure that out is by taking a look at the way Jesus handled crisis. We're into Jesus' Passion Week. We're taking a look at the events that were going on. And when you really take a look at all of the things that were going on during these 8 days of this Passion Week of Jesus, the very last week that Jesus was on earth, you can see that there was a ton of crisis. There was all kinds of weird things that were going on. There were promises made and broken. There was just a ton of different things happening, and it was all happening during the Passover. The Passover was a time of celebration. It was one of the celebratory pilgrimages that the Jews were supposed to make to Jerusalem so they could remember an event that happened a couple of thousand years earlier. The people of Israel were enslaved in Egypt. And God sent the death angel, and only those who had the lamb's blood on their doorposts and on the lintels of their houses were spared. The death angel affected everybody else, including Israelites that didn't obey. And so this Passover is a remembrance because after that event happened, the Pharaoh said, basically, go away. I don't want you around anymore. And he got rid of them, sent them into the desert. And so Passover was a holiday to the Jews, and it was a prime example of people who thought that even in crisis they could be in control. But there were a lot of people involved in this instance who tried to deal with the crisis well, and they didn't. So let's take a look at some of those. Let's start by looking at the Apostle Peter, Simon Peter. Excuse me. He tried to defend Jesus with the sword. Remember, we've been talking about how Jesus was on the Mount of Olives at the Gethsemane. After he's done praying, he goes into a garden where he is arrested, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But Peter, he's trying his best to be in control in this whole crisis. But one against several hundred soldiers? I mean, really? They come to arrest Jesus, and Peter says, I can defend you, and he takes a sword, and he cuts off the ear of one of the attendants of the chief priests, and Jesus rebukes him. Put your sword away, Peter. You have no idea what you're doing. I have to drink this cup because it's the cup that God has given me. You are not going to be able to defend me because really I don't need you to defend me. Yeah, Peter didn't handle crisis. He's also standing in the courtyard. Do you remember that? Where after Jesus is arrested and he's taken away, John and Peter find their way into the courtroom. John has some acquaintances, so he kind of gets them in. And Peter is sort of kind of by himself in this courtyard. Three times people ask him some kind of a question where he has the opportunity to say that he is a part of Jesus' entourage, if you will, that he understands and he knows who Jesus is, and three times he denies that this happens. In fact, this crisis brings out his base nature so much that he loses his cool, and in one of the Gospels it says that he swore, I do not know the man. And this isn't I'm putting my hand on a stack of Bibles. This was cussing. Blankety, 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 blank, leave me alone. That kind of thing. So when the Apostle Peter is faced with crisis, he doesn't handle it very well. He had an opportunity to. The interesting thing is after he did that, two things happened. The first was the prediction of Jesus that a rooster would crow. And that's exactly what happened. And then the other thing is even more frustrating. The Lord turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. So Peter went out and wept bitterly. Can you imagine that? You are cussing and swearing that you don't even know who the master is. And then all of a sudden, because of certain circumstances, and there's no such thing as a coincidence with Jesus. After that happens, somehow Jesus and Peter's eyes met. Can you imagine the disappointment in Jesus' face? Oh, Peter, you had an opportunity to handle the crisis well, and he didn't. And he regretted it. Another person that regretted the way that they handled the crisis is Judas. You remember Judas? He's the one who betrayed Jesus, Judas Iscariot. We already know that Satan had entered Judas' heart, and for the price of 30 pieces of silver, Judas led the temple guard into the garden on the other side of the Kidron Valley, where he kissed Jesus, that kiss of death, and he betrayed Jesus into the hands of the priests, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, the temple guard. All of them were there, and Jesus didn't resist. Have you ever wondered what Judas did after he betrayed Jesus with the kiss? He probably stepped back and said, okay, now I've got this ball rolling here. I've got things happening, so now Jesus, you need to step up. Come on, Jesus, I know you can do it. You have brought people back from the dead. You have healed the lame and the blind, those who were born that way, not just those who got lame because of an accident. You have power. So show it. And instead, the scriptures say that when the soldiers came, Jesus said, who are you looking for? We're looking for Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus comes up to them and says, that's me. And the Bible also says that all of the soldiers just fell down. You see, they didn't arrest Jesus. Jesus gave himself to them. And Judas is in the background saying, no, that's not the way this is supposed to work. You are supposed to become this mighty Messiah, this one who is going to destroy all of our oppression. You're supposed to be the truth, the way. You're supposed to be everything that we needed. I just want to push you into that because I'm not seeing it. Now, I don't know that that's exactly what Judas was thinking. I'm just speculating in my own mind. But where was he? I think he was standing back, watching to see what was going to happen next. And when it didn't happen, he regretted his decision. Because we do know that immediately after that, Judas took that 30 pieces of silver and he took it back to the chief priests and he said, I don't want to have anything to do with this. He regretted his choices because he didn't handle the crisis very well. He thought that by being in charge and being in control, he could handle things, but he was so filled with regret that the way he handled crisis was ultimately by taking his own life. Wow. He didn't handle crisis very well. And then, of course, we have the soldiers, the temple guard, who came to arrest Jesus, even though Jesus gave himself to them. They didn't handle things very well, because later we find out that Jesus was brought in for questioning, and as punishment, he was severely tortured. He was beaten. He was whipped. There was nothing about this that was kind. In fact, I can imagine as soldiers, they probably relished the idea of taking someone that the Jews thought was their Messiah and just beating the tar out of him. And that's what they did. I've read accounts of doctors who have examined the scriptural accounts of what happened to Jesus, the amount of blood that he probably lost, how his body was probably ripped to shreds with the whip, which, by the way, was likely a cat and nine tails. A cat and nine tails was a handle about a foot and a half long with 9 3-foot-long strips of leather, and embedded into the leather was glass and pottery and stones. And they swung that 39 times. Each time, those leather straps would bite into Jesus' body and the flesh would be ripped off. He was basically made into hamburger. And they did it for fun. The reason I can say that is because the Bible also says that when they beat him, they mocked him. Apparently, there was a game, and I did a little bit of research, there was a game where you would blindfold somebody and you would punch them in the face, and they were supposed to be able to tell by the smell who it was that hit you. And that's what they were doing. If you read in the Gospels, you will see that they hit Jesus and then they would say, who hit you? They were making sport of Jesus. This was not just a punishment. This was vengeance. This was, I have the power, and I can beat on this man, and I'm going to. And I'm going to make fun of it while I'm doing it. The fact that they pounded a crown of thorns into Jesus' skull was again, oh, really? You're a king? Well, then let's put a crown of thorns on you. And Judean thorns are probably about 5 to 6 inches long, and they are as hard as nails. And they didn't just lightly set that on Jesus. They beat that into his skull. And then they put a purple robe on him. What do you suppose happens when cloth congeals with the hamburger on Jesus' back and the blood soaks into that, and then they tore it off of him later. If you think that this was a sanitized Jesus who didn't experience any pain going to the cross, you have not read Scripture. This was awful. And how did the soldiers handle it? They thought they were in control. I'm just doing what the boss tells me. I'm just doing what my general has told me to do. And the fact that I get to beat on somebody else, fantastic. But then there is the people that did order this, the chief priests. How did they handle this crisis? Well, they didn't handle it very well either. Do you remember that Caiaphas had already prophesied that Jesus had to die? We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. He already said, one man has to die for the whole nation because that's just the way this is going to be. And I am prophesying that it's going to be Jesus. And so he sent everybody out to try to get Jesus. Jesus was on the hit list. He was on everybody's radar. There was a bolo out. Be on the lookout. For those of you who have never watched NCIS. The high priest didn't handle this very well. In fact, they brought Jesus in for trial. Mark Moore in the book, the Quest 52 book, he lists 10 reasons, and there are more, but there were 10 for sure reasons why this was a violation of Jewish law. Let me just read through the list. Jesus was arrested through a bribe. That's illegal. He was arrested without a specific charge. That's illegal. The trial was held at night. That's illegal. There were false witnesses and conflicting stories. It's illegal to continue with a trial when you have conflicting stories. He was not allowed to cross-examine the witnesses. Jesus wasn't. That was illegal. He was asked to incriminate himself. Remember what Caiaphas said? Are you the king of the Jews? The high priest declared a verdict and a sentence without first asking for a vote. And in a death penalty kind of a situation, it had to be a unanimous vote. And we know of at least two on the Sanhedrin that would not have voted for Jesus' death. Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea. Jesus was struck in the face during a trial without cause, only because the high priest said blasphemy, and he hit Jesus in the face, and then he tore his own clothes. The charges against Jesus were changed. We're going to talk about that in a minute, when he went before Pilate. And he was convicted and sentenced on the same day when Jewish law says you have to have a 24-hour cooling off period. You can convict a person, but you cannot sentence them for 24 hours. None of that happened. Why? Because they were bent on Jesus' death. Wow. They didn't handle things very well. The thing that really exacerbated the problem was when the high priest said, "Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed?" When he wanted Jesus to incriminate himself, Jesus said something that really stirred the pot. He just simply said, "I am." Instantly, they would have known that Jesus was claiming for himself the name that only belonged to God. I am. Now, the gloves were off. He was saying he was God, which is why the high priest said, "Blasphemy. What else can we do but kill this man?" The interesting thing, though, is according to Jewish law, he was supposed to be stoned. But in that culture at that time, they couldn't just carry that out because they had to wait 24 hours. But if they got the Romans involved, things could happen a lot faster. And so now we have Pontius Pilate coming into the scene. And I really do appreciate everything that Joe said about Pontius Pilate. He was a low-level diplomat, if you will. But he was hated by the Jews. He really was. In Luke chapter 13, verse 1, it says that he tried to, or he did. He ordered the death of some Galilean Jews who were making sacrifices in the temple. In another historical reference by the historian Josephus, it says that Pilate tried to take some shields that honored the Holy Roman Emperor Tiberius, and he wanted to place them in Herod's palace. Herod was a Jew. He was considered the king of the Jews at the time. But Pilate wanted to put these shields in Herod's palace. Well, that wasn't going to happen. Because the minute that you take something as Gentile as that and put it in a Jewish palace, now all of a sudden you've desecrated the place. What was worse was Pilate decided we need an aqueduct here in this area, and so he took money out of the temple treasury in order to build that. The Jews tried to get that money back by appealing to Rome. It didn't happen. That made him even more hated by the Jews. He wasn't liked by the Romans either. I did a little bit of digging and found out that Pilate had a patron in Rome, basically. The patron's name was Sejanus. He was an advisor to Emperor Tiberius, but Sejanus got caught plotting an assassination of the emperor. When he got caught, he was executed. Any person who was connected to Sejanus was now under suspicion. That included Pilate. Yeah, he wasn't liked by Rome, and he wasn't liked by the Jews. He was kind of a mean man. But yet, here Jesus is standing before him. The Jews have brought Jesus to Pilate. They have held their fake trial, and Jesus was falsely accused. He was indicted as a blasphemer, but they weren't about to stone him because, well, you know, they wanted it to happen right now. And if they had Rome do it, then they could say, oh, we didn't do it. Our hands are clean. Now I can go into the temple because I haven't been a part of something like this. Do you see how devious things were? And so they go to Pilate. Do you realize that Pilate tried 7 times to release Jesus? His wife even got into the situation. Don't have anything to do with that man. I've had a dream about him. You do not want to have anything to do with this Jesus. And Pilate tried, as Joe read out of that scripture. He tried everything he could. But the Jews decided that if they were going to get Jesus off of their hands and let the Romans do their dirty work, the only way to do that was to change the charges. So in front of Pilate, they began to accuse Jesus, saying, we found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ the King. They changed the charge from blasphemy to treason. The great exchange was not just Jesus for Barabbas. There were all kinds of exchanges going on. Because they wanted Jesus dead so badly. So Pilate interrogates Jesus. Now remember, Jesus has already been beaten by the Roman guards. And then Pilate says, I'll send him to be beaten some more. We'll make sure that this guy knows that we mean business. But I don't find a treasonous charge. I don't find any validity in that. And so Pilate asks, are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus basically replies by saying, well, are you saying this? Or are you trying to trick me into saying something treasonous so that you can then justify what you're about to do? Pilate wasn't in control here. Jesus was. 7 times Pilate tried to release Jesus. Though he found no guilt in Jesus, he was still confused about what the truth is. He even tried, and Jesus told him the truth, and Pilate just couldn't understand it. So he did the only thing that he thought he should do. He washed his hands of the whole situation. I'm going to be that ostrich. I'm going to stick my head in the sand. I'm not going to deal with the crisis. I'm just going to let other people deal with it. You do whatever you want with them. I don't care anymore. My hands are washed of this. I am done with this. And that's how some people handle crisis. So how did Jesus handle all of this? How did Jesus handle all this crisis? How could he be in control throughout this whole time? I mean, when he was falsely accused, when he was beaten beyond recognition, when he was hung on the cross, when he was enduring false trials and false accusations, when there were all kinds of things, did he whimper? Did he cry? Did he whine? Did he beg? No. No, we know how he handled this crisis. He stayed in the will of God. That's how he handled the crisis. He stayed in the will of God. And what was that will? Well, the Bible tells us all about it. God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. Love is what kept him in control. He loved us. He loved Peter and he loved Pilate. He loved Caiaphas and he loved Judas. He loved the soldiers that were swinging that cat and nine tails. He loved King Herod. He loved the crowds that were screaming, "Give us Barabbas, crucify Jesus." He loved each and every one. Why? Because that's the will of the Father. As a disciple of Jesus, we are on trial. Life is filled with crisis. Some crises are massive crises. They affect everything about us. We lose a loved one. We are betrayed by someone we trusted. We have people who don't step up for us and don't support us and don't encourage us. And we have a small little crisis, like somebody broke my plastic glasses. But how do you handle it? The only way that we can handle it is the same way that Jesus did. We have to stay true, because we don't need to be afraid of those who can kill the body but cannot kill the soul. We do need to be afraid of the one who can destroy both in hell. Stay true to the love of Jesus Christ. You don't need to get into a vengeance kind of a thing. You don't need to fill your life with negativity. You don't need to say, they hurt me, so I'm going to hurt them. You don't need to teach them a lesson. You don't need to bring up their past. You don't need to bury your head in the sand and deny that anything hurt or anything happened. You just need to stay true to God's will. You see, crisis tends to bring out our base nature. The only thing that will help us to stay in God's love is a commitment to be faithful unto death, so that we might receive that crown of life. My friends, if we learn anything from this Passion Week of Jesus, let it be that as Jesus handled crisis, so can we. The Holy Spirit will give us the power that we need.